It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. The U.S. Justice Department reported that the country's state and federal prison population rose 2.1% from 2021 to 2022. The state of Wisconsin saw a similar increase. That may not seem like a lot, but it reversed a trend of 10 straight years of declining prison population rates and incarceration rates across the country. And the latest numbers still show significant racial disparities. Wisconsin, in particular, remains the state with the largest disparity between black and white male incarceration. We're checking in on the recent changes in prisons and the impact it can all have on our communities, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Why do you think we saw that longer-term decline and then a recent bump in the latest numbers in incarceration? How do you want to see our justice system approach things like sentencing and imprisonment? Have you or a loved one been in the prison system yourself? Share your experience, your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Jason Roby is an assistant professor in the School of Criminal Justice at the University at Albany SUNY. He did his graduate and doctoral work at UW-Madison, where he researched mass incarceration and racial disparities. Jason, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, Rob. It's a pleasure to be here.
Jason, we talked to you last fall about why incarceration rates had been declining for that long period. Can you remind us again what we know about what was driving that over that last decade?
Yeah, so really the decades-long decline in incarceration rates has really been driven by shifts, you know, throughout the criminal justice system in the composition of our nation's population, in crime rates among individuals, particularly youth, and in the political landscape as well. These have all been contributing factors to driving down incarceration rates in the United States.
And maybe the bigger story is, if we dig a little further back, the huge increase in incarceration rates starting, depending on how you slice it, I think the early 1980s. Can you talk about what we saw starting around then-ish?
Yeah, so starting in the late 70s, early 80s, and into the 90s, we saw a really significant increase in the number of people in prison in the United States. By some estimates, about a sevenfold increase in the number of people in prisons, and disproportionately locking up young black men in particular in the United States, really launching the United States into the highest incarceration rate in the entire world. And that was driven by a lot of different factors. Part of it was a real increase in crime that occurred in the 70s and 80s in particular. And there was also sort of the tough on crime era, is what it's known as, you know, a shift in policy around the United States, hoping to lock up more people and for longer periods of time.
Now, let's look at these latest numbers. It takes a while to complete these surveys, I gather. We've got a survey from the end of 2022 showing, after that decade of declines, the number of people incarcerated going up instead, about 2%. Now, when you look at that, you say, well, that could be a blip in the midst of this long-term trend, or it could be a reversal. What do you make of this particular big data point?
Yeah, so first I want to emphasize, like you said, that this increase in 2022 was rather small and was also only an increase relative to 2020 and 2021, which were, you know, very anomalous years. So like many areas of our society, the prison system and court systems were drastically affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. So in 2020, courts in the United States and virtually every state completely closed for weeks or even months. And when they resumed, they were often conducting court on Zoom. And so these were causing significant delays and backlogs that caused, in 2020, there were 200,000 fewer people in prison by the end of 2020 than there were in 2019, which is the largest single year change of the prison population in recorded history. So in many ways, 2020 and 2021 were anomalies and not exactly the best, you know, comparison for us to make. And so a lot of us researchers were really waiting for these 2022 statistics to be released as our first glimpse at what the new sort of post-COVID normal would be for our nation's prison system. And so for me, the better comparison to make is comparing these to 2019, mm-hmm. sort of the last, you know, quote unquote, normal year that we had. And so compared to 2019, the prison population in 2022 was about 15% smaller nationally and about 13% smaller in the state of Wisconsin.
So that would suggest that this longer term decline is still going on once we get past the very weird, as you say, years of 2020 and 2021.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can think of an analogy of, you know, comparing the unemployment rate, for example, right? That spiked tremendously in 2020. But, you know, in terms of understanding the long term trends of unemployment in the United States, you know, maybe not the best year to make comparisons to in some ways.
So what is happening, again, accepting those couple of COVID years, what is happening that's leading us over this time to see this steady decline in the number of people incarcerated in the United States?
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, sort of briefly, there are several different factors, right? So crime rates in the United States are substantially lower today than they were 30 years ago, about 50 to 60% lower, depending on what type of crime you're talking about. And evidence suggests that the youth today in particular have even lower rates of criminal behavior, lower rates of alcohol use, and also lower rates of drug use than youth did 20 to 30 years ago. So it's not just that the overall crime rates are declining, but also that youth crime rates in particular are declining. There have also been notable shifts in the criminal justice system, particularly with respect to racial disparities. So racial disparities and arrest rates have declined significantly in the last 20 years, meaning that, you know, there are reduced disparities in the policing of in our country in general. And there's also some evidence to suggest that courts have become, less racially disparate in sentencing individuals to prison and how long they sentence people to prison. And lastly, I just want to touch briefly on politics here, right? Many researchers, journalists, and politicians have noted a persistent and growing, you know, bipartisan consensus that America's experiment with imprisonment went too far and needs to be reined in. And so there's really been a sort of bipartisan consensus for a number of years now that we need to reduce the prison population in the United States.
Jason Roby is with us, criminal justice expert at the University at Albany, talking about how many people are in prison in the United States, an uptick this year from the COVID years, but as you heard, a longer-term trend that sees fewer and fewer people incarcerated over time. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your thoughts, maybe your experiences in the criminal justice system. That's 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Jason, I want to talk a little bit about the current prison population, seeing numbers showing more and more unprecedented numbers of seniors. Older people in prison as people in long-term incarceration age. And this is a big factor in funding for criminal justice. Those people living in there at older ages facing the same problems as anybody else as they age, a higher medical cost, things like that. What do you make of that? How big a problem do you see this?
Yeah, this is a significant problem in the United States prisons today. And it really has a couple of sort of driving factors. One, like I said, there are some differences in cohorts or generations within the United States and how much crime they committed while they were younger, but also how much they were exposed to sort of the peak of mass incarceration in our country. So the current, you know, generation of youth has very low crime rates and very low arrest rates and very low incarceration rates. But the generation that was sort of coming of age, entering adulthood during the sort of rise of mass incarceration was exposed to these really high incarceration rates, and as a result of that, have been continually exposed to incarceration throughout their lifetime, and particularly as they've aged into middle ages as well. And the other part of it is these long sentence lengths that the United States has, which is relatively unique on an international stage, in that, you know, about a third of all prisoners in the United States at the end of 2019 had been there for at least 5 years. And about 20% of them had been there for at least 10 years, right? And so we have sort of two problems. One is that, you know, we have an increasing number of older individuals being sent to prison relative to what we had 20 years ago. And we also have an increasing number of people aging while in prison as well.
And related, I think, to that, Jason, I've seen some stats here in Wisconsin and elsewhere saying a leading cause of somebody being sent to prison is for violating the terms of their release from prison, which might involve alcohol use, if that was stipulated as something you can't do after you are released from prison, or other drug use, things like that. How important is revocation of somebody who's been released from prison and has to go back in the numbers we're talking about?
That's extremely important. Nationally, I believe the number is about one third of all prison admissions in the United States are people who have been who are being revoked off of their parole. And so sometimes that is what's known as a technical violation, right? So somebody who's committed something that is not a crime necessarily, but is against the conditions of their release from prison. And sometimes it can be a new crime that occurs that is mm-hmm. is what ultimately results in them going back to prison. But it's a significant driver of prison populations in the United States today.
We're talking to Jason Roby, criminal justice professor at the University at Albany, about trends in incarceration, a recent uptick in prison population after the COVID years, but a long-term trend of declining numbers of people in prison. Coming up, we'll look at racial disparities in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest? How do you feel about the way the U.S. handles incarceration? What impacts have you seen the prison system have, maybe on your own family or your community? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts on that revocation issue we were just talking about? What leads someone back into prison for violating the terms of their release? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation with Jason Roby, assistant professor in the School of Criminal Justice at the University at Albany SUNY, graduate of UW-Madison, with us today for a look at incarceration rates, long-term decline, a little uptick in the most recent years after COVID. Join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. Before we go to our callers, Jason, I wanted to talk to you about racial disparities, something you've studied here in Wisconsin, some of the biggest disparities in Wisconsin among states in the country. What are you watching lately?
Yeah, so, I mean, in Wisconsin has for a long time had the largest racial disparities in the United States in terms of incarceration rates, although they did come down a little bit in the last 20 years. From about 14-1 to about 9-1. So still a very large disparity in Wisconsin, but smaller than it had been 20 years ago. And this is sort of a trend we've seen nationwide for both men and for women, that the racial disparity in incarceration rates has continued to decline, but still has more room to decline further.
Let's go to our callers now. Jim is with us in Hartford. Jim, hi.
Hi. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I think more people should be locked up. If you look at the crimes that are going on the street on a daily basis, DAs are just letting multi-offenders go. Look at the Waukesha massacre, you know, at Christmas time, at a Christmas parade. He had multiple offenses. This is one example of several that come across the news where they're just not locking people up, especially people who have gun charges against them. They're found with guns and they just let them go. Well, you know, we're going to give them a second chance. And as far as racial disparity goes, I mean, the numbers have been proven that more blacks, even though they're more black people, do create more crimes. They're a minority of the population, yet they're a majority of the crimes that are committed. And a lot of them are black on black.
Jim, thanks for the call. Jason, let's start with Jim's first point. He wants to see more people incarcerated, effectively saying we're soft on crime and that's leading to more crime.
Well, so, I mean, I think, you know, there's always the tendency to, you know, be fearful when things like that happen. And it's unavoidable that, you know, we can never erase crime completely from our society. And it's inevitable that sometimes we might make the wrong decision in letting somebody out. We also can't hold everybody who commits a crime forever, right? We have to at some point recognize that everybody we send to prison will one day come out of prison for the most part. And what do we do while they're in prison to try to help them or try to reduce the likelihood that they'll do that again? And for the most part, once somebody's been out of prison for 7 years is usual, the number of people you usually use, they're no more likely to commit a crime than somebody who's never been to prison in their life. So for the most part, for most people who are released from prison, they do end up, you know, making it back into a law-abiding life and refrain from committing crimes in the future. So there are always exceptions to any rule.
And Jim argues that more black people end up in prison because more black people commit crimes. What do we know?
So there are racial disparities in prisons can come from a lot of different places, right? So there can be underlying racial disparities in, you know, how many people commit crimes in different communities, or, and also, you know, how many people are arrested having committed a crime, and how many people are sent to prison having committed a crime. And what we see in regards to race is that there are disparities at every single level. But so one particular example that people have often used is for drug crimes in the United States. Rates of drug use in the United States are actually very similar for white individuals and for Black individuals, but Black individuals are much more likely to be arrested for that. And if they are arrested, they're much more likely to be convicted by a prosecutor and a judge. And if they're convicted, much more likely to be sent to prison. Right? And so these disparities can arise at any point along the way. And there are some real underlying racial disparities in crime rates at the outset, but these are sort of amplified by, you know, the various decision points along the way in the criminal justice system that make the disparities in the prison population much worse than the underlying, you know, differences in crime rates, which are relatively small.
Let's go back to our callers. Mike is with us in Milwaukee. Mike, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to bring up, Mike?
Yeah, this subject matter kind of hits close to home. I have a family member, first-time nonviolent offender in a different state that's been, his sentence now is going on 14 years out of 15 years. He was denied multiple appeals, and from what his attorneys have told him through the process is the reason why, I don't want to get into his crime because that's a whole separate matter. I'm not justifying what he did, you know, did or didn't do, but essentially, how do you see in the political spectrum affecting prison populations if a judge or judges want to get elected and, quote, be tougher on crime, giving, you know, more stiffer penalties or longer penalties or more imprisonment in those areas?
Mike, thanks for the call. Do we know, Jason, if an election of justices or district attorneys or, you know, be hoping to be appointed to those posts influences a tough on crime attitudes for prosecutors and or judges?
Yeah, there is definitely some evidence to suggest that, you know, when judges know they have an election or a re-election coming up, they might, you know, change their sentencing a little bit. But in general, judges are relatively fixed is what we often see. You know, in order to become a judge in the United States, you have to, you know, have a number of years of criminal justice experience and a number of years as a prosecutor, a public defender, or some other type of legal profession within the field. So for the most part, most judges are relatively fixed in their decision making and don't change a whole lot in those decisions. But things like elections and re-election can shift their opinions as well. Although I would say that, you know, like I mentioned earlier, there is a growing bipartisan, you know, effort and consensus that we should be trying to reduce the use of prison and use alternatives to prison. And so I think more and more in recent years, that's likely less of a problem today than it was 10, 15 years ago.
Mike, thanks for that call. Jim joins us now in Watertown. Jim, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking the call. So I served my time in Virginia, not in Wisconsin, but from stories I've heard, it's not that different. What I've got to say is a couple of things, really. One, when incarcerated, if you are a nonviolent, you know, somebody who was on the verge of being able to serve their time in a jail or but got sent to a prison, you are generally put in with the harder criminals because it is a calming factor for the dorms or odds or whatever you want to call them. So those people that are serving time there have to, you know, protect themselves, have to become something like what you're living with. Otherwise, you're going to have to defend yourself daily. The other part of this is, you know, for the recidivism part, I guess is what I'm talking about. And the other part of that is that you have nothing to fall back on when you get out. Nothing. You are sent out penniless, maybe, you know, for the most part penniless, to and expected to live a law-abiding existence. And if you're talking about the disparity between races, you take that same person and put them in a city where there are very few jobs, very few places even to buy food or, you know, clothing or whatever.
Jim, we're just about out of time. And thank you so much for sharing your story. Jason, Jim pointing toward a couple causes maybe of recidivism, that low-level nonviolent offender all of a sudden living among people who have committed more serious crimes and no support on the way out the door.
Yeah, thanks, Jim, for sharing your experiences. And just to reiterate, yeah, I think that's one of the key areas of trying to reform the criminal justice system today. And going back to our first caller and this idea of recidivism and why people commit crimes again, a lot of it has to do with the resources we do or many times don't provide to people who are coming out of prison that they might need in order to regain that life they want to have.
Jim, thanks a lot for that call. In our last half a minute or so, Jason, what is the big open question for you as you watch for trends and how many people get locked up in the next year or two?
Yeah, I mean, my ultimate, you know, curiosity here is what's going to happen with prison admissions in particular. So prison admissions in 2022 were just under 500,000. The last time prison admissions were that low in the United States, you know, before COVID was 1992. And so do we continue to see, you know, people being sent to prison at lower and lower rates, or do we start to see things start to tick up again as, you know, violent crime and homicide in particular has sort of increased in the last couple of years? How will those things play out going into the future? That's my main curiosity.
Jason, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rob. It was an honor to be with you.
That's Jason Roby, assistant professor in the School of Criminal Justice at the University at Albany SUNY. He did his graduate and doctoral work at UW-Madison. He joined us today to talk about why incarceration rates have been going down in the long term, a blip up in 2022 after declining even more because of COVID. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.